Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, talk. Why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And it is indeed Karen Cataline with you for show number 73 on this July 2nd, 2 days before the 4th of July. I got a great show planned for you, plus lots to talk to you about, both current and, oh, I don't know, 200 and something years old. It's 2 days before the 4th of July, as I mentioned. We will have in the second half hour my friend and someone who gave me an early start in talk radio, John Andrews. And he is an amazingly accomplished person. Not only was he president of the Senate in Colorado, but he was a Nixon speechwriter. The other thing some people know about him, but not everybody knows, is that it seems like everywhere he goes, he plants little seeds and he starts organizations, and then he lets people run with it. He's done this again and again and again. He's a real, I won't call him too old because he's not too old, but he's an elder statesman in conservative thought. He's an author. He's written 4 or 5 books. I'll be telling you more about him in the second half of our show. John Andrews, so you'll want to stay tuned for that. So, of course, I spend a lot of time on this show, proudly, happily, talking about freedom in this country. And once again, in 2 more days, we're going to celebrate not only the 4th of July, but Independence Day. Rather than going through a lot of technical stuff, which probably some of my listeners are going to be better than I am at things like quoting the Constitution and that kind of thing, but it matters a great deal to me, and I think to you as well. What is the state of personal liberty and freedom in this country today on the 4th of July, 2019? What is the state of our freedom? I think about liberty every day, as I said, and preserving the liberty of my fellow citizens, not just because, oh, I'm so great, but because if you're engaged in taking away someone else's liberty, then you're really taking away your own. And years ago, I wanted to come up with a speech about something that I cared about. And I came up with a speech called, Does Freedom Still Matter? This was during the previous administration. And I was deeply worried and concerned about whether or not freedom was going to survive in this country. That's what I was worried about. And I found some great quotes. And let me see if I can find one for you. This one I've always, always liked. You can only protect your liberties in this world by protecting the other man's freedom. You can only be free if I am. And a lot of people fail to understand that. Because if your neighbor doesn't appreciate or understand your freedom, what do you think the first thing they're going to do is? Well, they're going to vote for somebody who would take that freedom away. Probably or partially because they don't understand how protecting your freedom protects theirs. This notion that what I would do personally in my own life is something that I have to mandate for you to do is the very antithesis of freedom and what this country stands for. And on the negative side of the ledger, I am deeply and profoundly concerned about citizens of all ages, but particularly the young, who have been indoctrinated by leftist educators telling them that socialism is a perfectly acceptable economic alternative, and they don't even understand what socialism is. And as an aside, I just had an op-ed published in Town Hall that has to do with this very thing. The title, if you'd like to look it up, it just was published yesterday. And if you're listening to this on the podcast, it was published July 1st, 2019. That is my 10th article op-ed for Town Hall. They are wonderful. I really like Town Hall. Some of the best writers are there, syndicated. I'm not syndicated, but they're kind enough to post my stuff, usually, when I submit it. The piece is called, Why is the Left Trying to Decriminalize Crime? Why is the left trying to decriminalize crime? And I will try to get back to that because I actually do answer the question. So if you're going to be teased about why is the left trying to decriminalize crime, they actually are champions of making crime no longer criminal. And that is one of the many things that disturbs me. While they're out there turning criminals into victims, they're turning law-abiding citizens into criminals, and pretty soon it's all the same. But as usual, I digress. I'm going to get back to this wonderful quote. And in fact, I pulled this out of my stack a little bit late. So I'm going to read this to you because, well, I like it. Freedom is strangely ephemeral. It is something like breathing. One only becomes acutely aware of its importance when one is choking. Freedom is difficult to understand because it isn't a presence, but an absence of governmental constraint. People who are unfamiliar with severe political constraints, severe enough to make them aware that they have lost their freedom, often don't know what freedom is and on what it depends. That is a quote by William Simon. And that is exactly what we're up against today. There are people who have very strong opinions. More power to them. That's just fine. But when they have such a strong opinion that they need everybody else to live the same way they do, and they have been indoctrinated into believing that we're all just a collectivist group of people who have no individual needs, desires, dreams, hopes, and that it is okay if you're on the, quote, right side to mandate and force other people to agree with you and believe you, to believe the same thing as you do, then we're in a serious, serious problem and everybody's freedom is at stake. So it's so important. It's one of the reasons I do this show, Spouting Off, which is to talk about freedom, to talk about liberty, and what it is that will cause our liberties to fade away. And Ronald Reagan, and I say this by memory, said long ago, not so long ago, that freedom is only one generation from disappearing. And I did paraphrase. It's in my stack of notes somewhere, which is freedom is only one generation from going away. If you don't teach your kids about liberty, about the precious gift of liberty and freedom and what it takes to preserve that freedom, which is what our Constitution and our Declaration of Independence was written for, is to protect the rights of the individual. Today, we think of rights as nothing more than handouts, and the left has succeeded in making people think that everything we want is a right. It is not. It is not. What we want is only an opportunity. And along with rights comes responsibility. If you are not willing to be held accountable for your behavior, you're going to give up your rights in very short order. So how do we teach the next generation about freedom It's a huge topic. How do we do that when people are so ignorant of the Constitution and they've been taught a lot of hatred about this country? Another aside, right now, if you're listening to this live or if you're listening to this on the podcast, a story just came out about Colin Kaepernick, who was infuriated because he's on the board of Nike, the sports shoe manufacturer Nike, who came out with a Betsy Ross 13-star flag on the heel of one of their athletic shoes. Well, Colin Kaepernick wasn't happy with that, and he decided to protest, which he often does flags. What this has to do with police brutality, nobody knows. What it really has to do with is Colin Kaepernick's hatred for this country. He hates this country so much, he's not willing to even educate himself on what the country is about. He's been taught by whomever that America is a... Is an illegitimate country, and that somehow its very flag is offensive to him. Now that leads me to something I wanted to talk about. This is an example of exactly what I wanted to talk about. Well, all of it's about freedom, so just that's the umbrella here that I'm working on. When someone, remember about 6 months, no, a year or 2 years ago, we were talking about snowflakes, snowflake this, snowflake that. Everybody's a snowflake. Why? Because if you're offended by something, then you have to have everybody treat you like kid gloves, with kid gloves. And so if Colin Kaepernick is offended by the Betsy Ross flag, which is awfully anti-female, isn't it? Because Betsy Ross is one of the few people in our founding where, you know, she's a woman and she's usually celebrated. And so what? Because there were 13 stars on a flag and she sewed the flag, somehow it's offensive? Well, this is intellectual laziness and dishonesty. There is no such animal. But when you're teaching indiscriminate bigotry against America and against our flag and against everything this country stands for, well, and you also reward that ignorance, then it doesn't really matter if you're protesting a flag on a pair of shoes. Not only does that... harm the freedom of people who may want to buy that shoe, but it is terrible stupidity and ignorance for a company like Nike to make it unavailable to the rest of us because Colin Kaepernick doesn't like it. So I want to mention or just talk a little bit about my mental health background, okay? When people talk about being triggered, today that's a really, really trendy term, you know, triggered this. I was triggered by that. Oh, I can't look at the American flag and oh, no, I can't be triggered by a Make America Great Again red hat. And people on the right talk about being triggered and how ridiculous it is. And people on the left take it all very seriously. And that's a broad generalization. As a social worker and a person who was in the mental health field, the whole idea of triggers is a really valuable thing. It's valuable to appreciate and understand what your triggers are, especially if you're healing from traumatic issues, PTSD, which is an overdiagnosed term today, PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. If you're triggered by something, let's just say since food is my drug of choice, if I feel like eating a cake every time I get frustrated, well, that's a trigger for me, right? I got to pay attention to that trigger, and that's an important trigger to understand and know about. Here's the rub. When you recognize a trigger, it is not only counterproductive, but really wrongheaded to think that because you're triggered, everybody else has to change their life, their lifestyle, and their behavior because of you. Well, how foolish is that? Because if you're triggered, usually it's based on irrational thoughts, trauma from the past, ignorance, as in the case of Colin Kaepernick, and just a whole lot of other things. You got to take personal responsibility for your triggers. The problem is the left never teaches personal responsibility. In fact, they hate personal responsibility, if the truth be known. Because if the left were valuing personal responsibility, they couldn't be running all this collectivist nonsense on the rest of us. If you're black, you're a victim. If you're white, you have white privilege. If you're male, you have toxic masculinity. If you're white, if you're a female, you're a victim. This kind of broad, gross generalizations is the enemy of individualism, the enemy of anything that smacks of or that is a wonderful value for being judged as an individual. And the truth is, we are all individuals made up of, I hate even mentioning this because it's, as it was said in the Declaration of Independence, self-evident. It's self-evident that we're made up of all kinds of things, not only our genetic makeup and our background and our ethnicity and our IQ and our emotional intelligence, and our religion and our country and whatever, but also our choices in life, the choices we have made. The individual is the smartest critter out there. You ever seen the difference between mob rioting and mob rule and an individual who's thoughtful? There's a big difference, right? Individuals are a lot smarter than mobs, because they take into account individual thought and they take responsibility for their own behavior. The joy of the individual and the individual having as much freedom as it's possible to have, so you can welcome taking responsibility for the screwed up choices you make. That's a good thing. It means that you can learn from your mistakes and do it different next time. It means that you can rise through the ranks and achieve. Any system that truly elevates and appreciates and applauds individualism, liberty, is a wonderful system that has within it the capacity for great prosperity and great innovation. What is that system? The system that our founders created with the United States of America. That's what the Constitution is all about. It's about celebrating the individual, freedom, and responsibility. Our founders were so worried about not only mob rule, but about people appointing themselves lord and master over the rest of us, that they created a brilliant system of checks and balances so that no one entity could have too much power. Because they understood it's not that this entity is good and this entity is bad. It's that human beings will always grab for power if they aren't checked. And they understood that. And they created this wonderful system, some of which we're losing in this country because we have a virulent socialist left that continually supports the idea of not only mob rule, collectivism, but centralized government. That's another aspect, another tool on the stand of, that's another tool of the socialist left, is if they can centralize everything, then they can have these gross, generalized rules for everyone for the criminal actions of just a few. That's actually one of the lines of my recent op-ed, which is that instead of punishing the people who actually did the crime, we're going to make these blanket laws on everyone. Have you ever wondered why you have to take your shoes off in the airport? It's because one shoe bomber decided to put bombs, in his, I think it was, well, he had a shoe bomb. And he also had, there was plastic explosives, I believe, in that shoe bomb, if I'm not mistaken. And so to this very day, millions upon millions of people have to take off their shoes. Now, it's not a perfect analogy, granted, because there may be other shoe bombers. That's true. But when you go after law-abiding citizens for the criminal actions of criminals and turn criminals into victims, because after all, they're just a victim of the society, and law-abiding citizens are really the bad guys, what you're doing is exactly what we have today. And I go back to my article called "Why is the Left Trying to Decriminalize Crime?" And if you look at it, you'll see it's not hard. I hate reading my own stuff out loud, but this one little line is important so you can understand where I was going with this. You probably won't go broke predicting who today's left will defend next. They regularly characterize criminals as victims, I already said that, and law-abiding citizens as perpetrators. All they have to do is accuse the latter of racism, sexism, white privilege, toxic masculinity, or homophobia, and they've succeeded in turning the tables on Lady Justice. So why are they doing all this? Why do they want? And I go through a lot of this in my piece about how they want to decriminalize illegal border crossings, and then they want to hand out free health care to illegal aliens. In fact, they hate calling them that because to them, nobody's illegal. Well, guess what? There are boundaries and there are countries. And a lot of open borders leftists and some open borders Republicans who've been lying about what they really believe because they've been kowtowing to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and others who really have no allegiance to the United States of America. Those open borders people really do believe that everybody should come here. And not only should they come here, but unlike our grandparents, great-grandparents, it would have been my great-grandparents, who had to sign something to be sure that they wouldn't be a burden on the state, they want to hand them free health care, welfare, food stamps, and the like at the expense of the American citizen and taxpayer. Why? What's in it for them to legalize illegal behavior? And you'll really have to read this because there's a whole bunch of examples, including safe injection sites, which is preposterous. You know, there's a reason that methamphetamine and cocaine is illegal, and we're not going to prosecute that particular story at the moment. I have some libertarian leanings, but not really when it comes to heroin. Watch Live PD, and you'll see that 80% of crime. Now, all right, I'm going there, and I said I wouldn't. But criminal behavior is being normalized by the left. That's really my point. And I'm doing this impromptu because it's important. It's important. And that is the biggest threat to our liberty coming up on the 4th of July, Independence Day, 2019, is that criminal behavior is being normalized and law-abiding citizens are being made out to be criminals. And the problem with that is it's all in the service of socialism. They promote it as something that is compassionate. Well, we're going to be more compassionate. For example, in my piece, I cite the ACLU that is trying to reduce the prison population by 50% because, you see, because, you understand, we must, quote, combat racial disparities in the criminal justice system. Well, nowhere in any of their literature do they talk about the fact that the people that they want to let out of jail, 50% of them, whether or not they actually did the crime, to them it doesn't matter. If you're a member of a certain special group, it doesn't matter whether you're guilty or not guilty. Now, what kind of nonsense is that? That's turning logic on its head. In fact, what it's doing is inculcating racism where it doesn't belong. There's a reason Lady Justice is supposed to be blind, because Lady Justice doesn't care what color you are. At least she's not supposed to. Lady Justice just wants to know if you're guilty and whether or not you need to do the time because you did the crime. Now, to the left today, that is in and of itself racist. But you see, what I'm getting around to saying here is the left is engaged literally in turning American justice, jurisprudence, and our very culture upside down. As I say, they're not chipping away at civil society. They're taking a jackhammer to it. And they're doing it for a reason. They're not doing it because they're so compassionate. They're doing it because that, among all the other things that they've been doing lately, brings about socialism. That's why they're doing it. And if you were watching the presidential debates, it wasn't really much of a debate last week, but if you were watching that debate, you would see that only Bernie Sanders actually admits to being a, quote, democratic socialist. Just take the democratic out, because first of all, the Democrat Party has been taken over by socialists, and there really is nothing democratic about socialism. Eventually, you have to force people to do what you want, and therein lies the loss of our liberty. But just because Bernie Sanders claims to be a socialist doesn't mean that all the policies that all of the Democrat candidates, and there were more than 20, there are more than 20, have not agreed to in lockstep. It doesn't mean that we'll end up at the same sorry end of socialism. I hope and pray that Donald Trump is right and that America will never be a socialist country. People have died so that we wouldn't be. Our fellow American citizens have died, put their life on the line, got maimed and hurt for life so that America would never be a socialist country. And the very fact that we've been asleep at the switch and not teaching young people, I only have 2 minutes and I may not be able to get to all this. You see, I wasn't sure I had anything to say today. Let's think about an Independence Day Seder for teaching kids. I have talked about that for a long time. So has Dennis Prager. The Seder on Passover is the Jewish people's ability to tell the story of freedom and independence every year for something like 5,000 years. And what is it? It's a traditional meal in which we tell the story of the Jews' exodus from Egypt. I used to hate those Seders, but now I love them. I don't know if I love them, but I appreciate the value of being able to teach young people and tell them a story. This is before people were writing this stuff down. What America needs is an Independence Day Seder, because the subject is the same. The subject is freedom. The subject is liberty. And frankly, the subject is also personal responsibility, because you can't have freedom without it. If you're going to be irresponsible and not care about being responsible and learning from your mistakes, you might as well have the government take care of you, right? Well, that's a deal with the devil, because along with the government or anybody else taking care of you, they get to call the shots. They get to tell you what to do and what not to do. They get to tell you what kind of living you're going to make and how much money you get to have and what you're going to do with your life. And history is replete with genocides of benevolent dictators telling others that they knew best. So this whole show is about liberty and freedom. At least I hope so. That's what I love spouting off about the most. So we're going to celebrate Independence Day, liberty, and freedom on this show all the time, every week, all the time. Celebrate your freedom, exercise your Bill of Rights, and stand up strong for liberty, not just for yours, but for your fellow neighbors' liberty as well. We're going to come back with the great John Andrews right after this commercial break. So stay with us on Spouting Off.
Do Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Cataline, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karencataline.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N, and Cataline is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karencataline.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.karencataline.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off. And welcome back to Spouting Off. I'm your host, Karen Catalina. It gives me terrific pleasure to have on his first guest appearance, and it's hard to get him sometimes. So John Andrews, who is an author of 4 or 5 books, and former president of the Colorado Senate, and a former Nixon speechwriter. One of the things that a lot of people in the Colorado area sometimes don't know about John Andrews is that everywhere he goes, he creates and plants little seeds, starts organizations, hands them over to other people, and they flourish. Things like the Independence Institute, the Western Conservative Summit, much more. He even gave me a start on talk radio, for which I am forever grateful because I love it. John Andrews, welcome to Spouting Off.
Hi, Karen. Good to be with you as we gear up to celebrate one of the most important days in all human history, the day that the United States was born as the land of the free and the home of the brave on July 4th.
Yes, and you've written some wonderful books about that. Responsibility Reborn, A Citizen's Guide to the Next American Century. You're a real thinker, John, and you're known in the Colorado area for sure. And it's great to celebrate this with you. I remember when you, whenever you sent out an email, you would always sign it in self-government or in liberty. And that's what we are fighting here, or that's what we're fighting for. I want to take you back.
It is, you know, and yes. I particularly like to remind our fellow Americans that self-government is not merely a description of a remote set of political institutions to which we elect certain officials. Self-government starts with the person that each of us sees in the mirror, and it exactly, in a literal sense, it means the more I am in possession of my own decisions and responsible for them and thoughtful about them, the less I need to be governed by any external authority whatsoever, whether by informal social pressure or by formal legal constraints from government. That's really the 4th of July message to each of us. The better we are at self-government, one by one as individuals and in little communities, beginning with our families, the less we need the heavy hand of civil government weighing down upon us.
So well put. And I started with a few quotes about that very thing. A lot of people don't realize that I can only be free if you are. If there are people amongst us who believe that they can impose their will on us, then everybody's freedom is in danger, right?
Yes, indeed. It's freedom's indivisible, individual and indivisible. It's a bit of a paradox. But
yeah.
America has made it work gloriously well for going on 250 years. And one of the things that concerns me as a student of history is that every great nation and empire seems to hit its old age and in some cases its demise right around the 250-year mark. So that if you think of the actuarial tables of the life of great nations, the United States is in a danger zone where if we don't renew ourselves, and no better time to do it than the observations of Independence Day this week, if we don't renew ourselves as a free, self-governing, responsible people, we're headed for the sidelines. And it wouldn't be that America disappears from the map of the world, but the greatness that America has enjoyed and the opportunity and freedom and creativity and generosity that have made America the greatest nation in history are very much in our hands. We've got to cherish them, and we've got some renewing to do. We've really got some repair work to do on our country. And the actuarial tables of the life of nations, if you believe passively that we just go off a cliff, that danger does exist. But I don't believe in letting that happen.
No, you've always been one of the most optimistic, happy warriors I know when it comes to liberty and freedom and American greatness. What do you make? Here's a question for you I hadn't even intended to ask you. Let me see if I can formulate it. You have always been very optimistic, and yet you've been around maybe a little longer than I have, and you have a great historic perspective on issues. Would you say that what we are going through now is a particularly precarious time? I'm not talking about the Trump administration. I'm actually talking about the self-hatred of certain groups that seem hell-bent on turning our culture and our way of life upside down.
Well, we've never been as divided and polarized as a free people in our history, except in the period just before the catastrophe of the Civil War, 1850s into the 1860s, Karen. So it's a time of immense challenge and danger for our country, but I take heart that the nation came to horrific civil violence of brother against brother and state against state for 4 years, 1861 to 1865. We survived that. We pulled ourselves back together as one free, indivisible, united people. And it gives me heart that we can do it again. The conditions are not at all identical. And those who say we're on the brink of another civil war, it's a figure of speech that gets our attention, but it's unlikely to come to violence and shooting. Nonetheless, it's a precarious time for our country.
Yeah, I sometimes marvel at what my dear father, may he rest in peace, would think about today. He hasn't even been gone. He's been gone about 20 years. And what has happened in this last 20 years since he's been gone is extraordinary. He wouldn't have believed that we had avowed socialists running for president. He never thought that would happen, really. And that's precisely what we have. In fact, we had 20 of them who were espousing the same socialist agenda, whether they claimed to be a socialist or not. What'd you make of that, John Andrews?
In a way, the unstated assumptions of the party of more government, the Democratic Party, the party that believes a few elite experts know better than the rest of us how our lives should be governed. Those have been there for a long time. They've been there throughout yours and my lifetime. You can trace an unbroken line of continuity from Woodrow Wilson, and I say it with sorrow as a Republican, but even from his predecessor, Theodore Roosevelt, in the White House, an unbroken line of continuity then for more than 100 years of this temptation that if we make a god out of government, everybody's life can be easier and more pleasant, and abundance will flourish, and conflict will lapse away. There's no example where that has ever worked anywhere in the world, anywhere in history, and yet it's a fatal temptation that Americans have toyed with for years. In one way, it saddens and even shocks me that socialism is out in the open as the banner of the Democratic Party, but in another way, as I just suggested, it's not all bad to have them avowing and owning up to the implications of what Obama called the fundamental transformation that they seek for this country. It puts it all on the table. It takes away the euphemisms and the evasions, and it faces the American people with a very, very stark choice when we choose a president and control of the U.S. Senate and the control of the U.S. House of Representatives and countless state and local offices in about 16 months from now in the November 2020 election.
John, it's amazing. I haven't had the pleasure of talking with you about politics for a long time because you don't do talk radio anymore, and I don't get to be one of your sidekicks anymore, much as I enjoyed it so much. But I have come to that same conclusion, and I think that there is great cause for cautious optimism about us being able to see what was under the rock for a long, long time. And I just got to get your thoughts on this. I've never been the most, I've said this many times, so my listeners has heard me say this, never been the most religious Jewish person in the whole world. But I'll tell you, when Donald Trump was elected president, I said, there is a God. Not that I questioned it before that, but the perfect man for a very difficult time who has the ability to bring out the real story. I say he's like five shots of whiskey. You know, after five shots of whiskey and your hair's on fire, you start telling others who you really are and what you really believe. And Trump has that effect on a lot of people. And I think that is fundamentally, while it's concern, it's a very good thing because it's a lot harder to fight something.
It's a net plus for our country to understand the stakes. Karen, you and I, I think, are of one mind on this.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. So anyway, I'm going to shift gears because we're doing in a reverse what we were going to do. And that is, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your story. As a younger man, you were a speechwriter for Richard Nixon. And most people know that Richard Nixon had some conflicts and some scandals there, but something caused you to stand up and quit. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that for our audience, what that was all about, and what was it in your gut that said, I can no longer do this?
Karen, getting out of the Navy at age 25 in late 1969 through a friend of my father's, John Ehrlichman, the chief domestic policy advisor to President Richard Nixon, who was then in his first year in the White House, succeeding 8 years of Democratic leadership under John F. Kennedy and then Lyndon Johnson. In late 69 into early 1970, I was offered an opportunity to interview to become a junior assistant in the White House press office under Nixon's press secretary, Ronald Ziegler. I landed that job. Yeah, very much to my surprise, I had never aspired to do that. I wanted a job in journalism as I was taking off my Navy uniform at the beginning of 1970. But I found myself working for the White House press secretary for 1 year. And then it's funny, I was what I call an affirmative action appointment into the speech writing shop, to the extent that they wanted somebody under 30 that could be advising the president on how to communicate with the American people. Substantively, and it could be pointed to, honestly, as a token. It wasn't called that, but that was the idea. They wanted to be able to say, look, here's somebody under 30 at a time when the campuses are in turmoil, when there's a lot of resistance to young people going to Vietnam to fight in a war that had really not been sold, honestly, to the American people, at the time when the 18-year-old vote was about to come into the Constitution for the 1972 re-election that Nixon would be seeking. So young John Andrews, age 26, finds himself as a White House speechwriter, working with famous names like William Safire and Patrick Buchanan and Ben Stein. Mm. Love that experience, but Nixon gets into trouble, not by authorizing a break-in at the Democratic Party headquarters in early mid-1972 as he's getting ready to seek re-election, but by covering up his campaigns and even his White House staff's active or passive involvement with that break-in. And as he registered a huge landslide re-election in 1972, it looked as if the Watergate scandal would fade away. But there was one tough judge in Washington, D.C. named John Sirica that squeezed those Watergate burglars and ultimately broke them and began to get confessions from them of connections to higher up. And as time went by, I was less and less able to do my job as a speechwriter. If you think about it, it's a very personal responsibility that you're trying to help someone communicate. In this case, the most powerful official in the world, you're trying to help him communicate to the American people his message, his policies. It's not a matter of some wet behind the ears youngster like Andrews putting words into the mouth of the president, but helping the president say what he wanted to say himself if he had time to write that particular speech. And I had to get up every morning increasingly with a heavy heart, feeling that at the very least, my president, my boss, the man that had been my hero, was failing to root out the wrongdoing in his own campaign and administration. And I was even somewhat concerned that he was actively involved in covering up that wrongdoing. I never had special knowledge. I just had a sense, and you mentioned, Karen, where God figures into all of this. I was praying every day that my own meager human abilities would be supplemented by God's hand upon me to help me do a good job and help keep me out of trouble, keep me honest, keep me a man of integrity. And day by day, I began sort of feeling these whisperings of an inner spirit saying, you don't belong here anymore. If you can't find a way to challenge this organization to act with more integrity, and how was I going to do that as a rather low-level staffer? If you can't find a way to challenge this organization to act with more integrity, A, you've got to get out, and B, you've got to consider telling your story, what you've observed. I had no evidence of criminality or no particular grounds that Nixon should be impeached, but I thought that the whole thing stank. And in the fall of 1973, when the so-called Saturday Night Massacre led to the dismissal of the special counsel, and naturally there have been echoes of all this during the ordeal that Robert Mueller has imposed with Democrats in Congress and even Democrats in Trump's own administration and Department of Justice imposed on Donald Trump. But when the Nixon fired the special counsel, Archibald Cox, before long, that turmoil had given way to the turmoil of Vice President Spiro Agnew, twice elected as Nixon's running mate, being found involved in bribery when he'd been governor of Maryland, and Agnew resigned his vice presidency, which had never happened in the United States. Then there was more and more pressure that Nixon might resign or be impeached, and ultimately I had to get out. I couldn't breathe that atmosphere anymore. I didn't feel I was earning my paycheck anymore. It didn't make me an individual of special virtue, because people with every bit as much integrity and desire to serve their country well and to be honorable before their God stuck in the job because they wanted to support the office of the presidency, even though the occupant, the personality occupying that office of the presidency was someone that they had grave doubts about his integrity or his fitness to continue to serve. So I take nothing away from many a colleague who stayed on when I decided that I needed to move on. But after a few weeks of silence, I felt this additional impulsion that I needed to tell the world what I had seen and why I thought this president's future needed to be taken very, very seriously and really put on the table for judgment by the American people and its institutions, including possibly an impeachment. So I found myself in the news and the pages of the Washington Post and Newsweek magazine and CBS, the Morning News, and PBS, the Washington Week in Review on a Friday night. And it was on that PBS show with the interviewer Paul Duke very skillfully manipulating this. I was way over my head. Let's just acknowledge that. This young guy, 29 years old, and I had intended to say, well, maybe he should resign, and if he won't resign, maybe he should be impeached. And what they did is maneuver me to where the maybes got lost. They especially got lost when the press release was issued the next day based on the tape that I had shot for broadcast. And the press release just says former Nixon aide calls for a resignation or impeachment. I was way, way in the deep water at that time, and I didn't stay in the public eye for very long. My words were going to be used by the people that I most wanted to keep out of power. It was a terrible dilemma. But all said and done, Karen, you asked me to reflect on kind of how this may have any relevance today. I think the relevance of it is that I cared more about, and let's go right back to the 4th of July and the Declaration of Independence, America's birth certificate, and the Constitution that is based on the principles and truths in that declaration. I cared more about America's founding. I cared more about the rule of law, the consent of the governed, the idea that no one is above the law. Nixon had at one point made the shocking statement, trying to defend himself from criminality. He said, if the president does it, it's not illegal. Wow, stop and think about that.
That's nonsense.
Whatever he would decree was ipso facto okay with the law. That's not America.
And no,
I'm afraid that let's go back to the Democrats as the party that believes in more and more government, and some of them actually act as though government is God. If that's what you believe, then the end begins to justify the means. And that's one of the reasons I'm glad the socialists are calling themselves that, is that we can trace it back to Marxism-Leninism, which is the governing doctrine, the Bible of socialism. Because what is socialism except a polite name for communism? And you trace it back to the teaching of Karl Marx and Vladimir Lenin that the end justifies the means, and there is no objective right and wrong, no objective morality, and not everybody that's a Democrat, many of whom I serve with in the state Senate and respect and like as friends and admire as fellow patriotic Americans, but a lot of the Democrats are so intoxicated with this idea that we can have utopia if we just have more and more power concentrated in government and fewer liberties granted to we the people, that it becomes impossible for them to step away from it and say, wait a minute, this goes too far. They have abandoned the ability to say that anything goes too far. Very sad to
say. Yes. John, you're just a wealth of information. I didn't want to interrupt you because it's such a great story, and I've never really heard it all the way through. We are not going to have time for me to ask you, which means I only get to maybe get a chance to have you back again in a few more months to talk about how the kind of conscience that you displayed may not have been around in, say, the Obama years. That's what I wanted to get to. But since I cannot ask you that, we don't have enough time, I'd like to use the last couple of minutes for you to talk about your website, because you run a wonderful website, the books you've written. I got about 2 minutes. Where can people read you, find you, buy your books? That's important.
Years ago, before I was in the state Senate and before I had the opportunity to do talk radio for a few years following my Senate service, I began playing with the idea of imaginary hometown up on the Continental Divide near the real town of Buena Vista, where I spent many a year growing up. My imaginary hometown called Backbone, Colorado. Mm-hmm. Colorado has so many fun place names that we could play around with another time when we talk, Karen. But I made up the name of Backbone, Colorado as a thing with three or four layers of meaning, one of which is the continental divide is the backbone of the continent, but more important to you and me, those founding documents, the Declaration and the Constitution, the principles and truths in them, they are the backbone of our liberty as Americans, our nationhood. And we need more spine in the individuals, the kind of backbone that I hope I displayed in walking away from my job and telling America that what was wrong in the Nixon administration. And all told, that's been my signature for 20 years. It became the name of a radio show that's still on the air in Denver.
And so my wonderful radio show that you're the paterfamilias.
my website is backboneamerica.net, backboneamerica.net.
Right.
They're my books, Responsibility Reborn and Backbone Colorado, a new one I've just published called Downstream that my brother and I co-authored last year, a little memoir of what our lives have meant at the age of 70. All those books are available. And in the book Responsibility Reborn, my Watergate Nixon story is told in much more detail. One can order that right there on backboneamerica.net. And someone that wants a quicker version of my Nixon story and some reflections on how I, as a follower of Jesus Christ, a man living by the Bible, have tried to bring that into my political and government service, look up my essay called Dare to be a Daniel. Just search for that on the Backbone website, and the whole story is told right there, backboneamerica.net.
Boy, you know, when I invited you, I did not see the connection between the 4th of July Independence Day and having John Andrews on as my guest that week. But sure enough, you were the perfect guest to have. www.backboneamerica.net. Go read John Andrews. He has a wealth of information, and you've seen just how eloquent he can be and is. Thank you so much for joining us. I'd love to have you back again on Spouting Off. Thanks for being
Karen,
with us,
you
John.
You are a treasure to our state and our country. I love what you're doing. It's just an honor to be with you today, and happy for to you and yours.
Yes, same to you. Same to your
Thank
family.
You.
Yes.
See you
and
soon.
That. Yes, I'll see you soon. I hope so. And just so delightful to have him. What a great American. That's all the time we have for this edition of Spouting Off. Enjoy the 4th of July, Independence Day. Celebrate your freedom. Exercise your rights. That's what this show's all about. Website, you can reach me at www.karencataline.com, Facebook, Karen Cataline, Twitter, same name with a slash or an and sign. Thank you to Doug, my producer, and to BBS Radio, and thank you to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish, who just happens to be my husband. And tune in next week when there's going to be a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.